serial entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome to Startup Magazine podcast series, The Serial Entrepreneur. My name is Anna Flockett and I am your host. And today we are joined by Leo Scott-Smith, CEO and founder of Tended, a safety tech startup who have just launched a wearable with social distancing technology for those working in construction, manufacturing, infrastructure and logistics through to IoT and AI. Leo, first of all, thank you so much for being on the show today. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Really well, surprisingly. A bit tired, to say the least. I think that one of the downsides from working from home and also things growing at a rate that we hadn't expected is the effect of burnout. It's something that gets brought up quite regularly in our company all hands. So definitely feeling that. But other than that, really good. Thank you.
Good to hear. So I thought to start with, you could tell our listeners a little bit more about Tended, what you guys do and kind of where the idea came from.
Yeah, cool. So Tended is a tech startup. We're based out of Lincoln, so one of the few not based in London. It's rare. I think we're one of about four tech companies in Lincoln. But we are about 2.5 years old. We've got a team of 30 people and we create wearable devices which are used to detect and prevent accidents in the workplace. Now, Tended was started, it was an idea that I had for a need and a problem that I faced myself. So my background's actually in third world disaster zones and working in charity. And I was in Nepal both before and after the 2015 earthquakes because we had schools out there that we provided education to underprivileged children. And during this time, I was constantly faced with different dangers. So I had aftershocks, landslides, I even got ambushed once. So these really challenging scenarios, and I was often with people that didn't speak very good English, or they didn't have access to smartphones. And this sort of realization came in my head and said, well, what would happen in the event that I was involved in the unthinkable? I was ambushed or I was swept off a cliff and nobody was there to call for help. So I kind of started looking for solutions on the market and couldn't really find anything. And then very sort of similarly, my mum was involved in an accident on her own. Luckily, she wasn't seriously injured, but it could have been so much worse. So this idea just sort of really started to bubble and reinforce inside of me. And I said, well, what can I do? And I was looking for solutions. And I put together a business plan at the age of, I think I was probably 20 or 21 at the time. Had no idea about technology. I only just grasp it now. I'm definitely not a techie. And I went to our local university with some business cards that just said, Tended, we're hiring, and handed them out to a load of grads at the undergrad fair. And I was like, hey, do you want to come work for us? Like, making us out to be this really cool, exciting company. And then interviewed a few people. I'd had businesses in the past, so I kind of had a good grasp of what I needed to look for. And then I hired two people and kind of got everyone in a room and said, like, look, this is what we want to do. And it kind of just sort of went from there. We initially started out as a consumer product. So it's for like sports people, like active individuals, horse riders, that kind of stuff. But we started to take this sort of general pivot, you could say. It was a slow pivot. It was over a period of about a year where we started to look at more commercially focused opportunities because we had companies like Nestle and Rolls-Royce reaching out to us saying, we've seen what you're doing with wearable technology. It's really cool and really applicable to our workspace. Like, can we use it for ourselves? And we saw an opportunity and took that. We've kind of gone from strength to strength since then. And we now have clients all over the country in a whole variety of different industries, from construction and infrastructure and rail. And we're now not just working on detecting accidents, but also being able to prevent them as well with our wearable technology.
That's really cool. And I know you said obviously you're not really a techie, but could you kind of explain like how the wearables work and like what tech you kind of use?
Of course, yeah. So everything that we've built is totally proprietary, which is probably why we've got such a large team. About 16 of our team to date are engineers or product designers. And we have wearable devices which have a combination of different sensors in them, and they constantly monitor a user's movements. And we've got trends which have been sort of driven from machine learning algorithms, which allow us to detect what a abnormality would look like. So this could be like impact, weightlessness, inertia. And then in the event that we pick up on one of these abnormalities, the device will vibrate on their wrist and ask them if they're safe. And then if they're not, it will then send out an alert, which will then trigger calls, text messages and emails to their sort of line manager to tell them that one of their employees could be in danger. And then it also has their location attached to that, as well as their health information and things. And that's like our core accident detection technology, but we're now sort of building upon that and looking at accident prevention. So to do that, we're looking at like fatigue monitoring. So we use calculations from HSE on what activities an individual sort of would be taking part in, which would make them fatigued within their working environment. And then like collision avoidance, so detecting where employees are in relation to different bits of heavy machinery or trains, and then giving them instant feedback to allow them to be more aware of their surroundings to sort of avoid that human error element, which is often sort of the main cause of fatalities within the sort of working environment. I'd say that it's really, as a company, our mission is to, and you know, companies have, especially startups, there's this habit of them having these like big visions and missions that are like changing the world, and I don't want to fall into that trap, but like our mission is to make the world a safer place with technology that empowers, inspires and saves lives. And we kind of really reinforce that through our technology and ensure that we are helping to make a difference through really cool advanced technology and helping to save lives.
No, it sounds like it. It sounds really amazing. And obviously you kind of mentioned that you started out in the sports area and then got approached by these like big companies. I guess you work across a number of industries, but do you have like a main industry that's kind of most popular with your products and your wearables?
Yeah.
So I'd say that it's definitely in construction and rail as well. So they're the sort of two main players because they're very high risk industries. Manufacturing and logistics as well is quite a large one, but we've got clients in, and I'll come on to this a bit more with our COVID solution, but clients that you would have never even imagined reaching out to us that are saying, oh, we're really interested in your technology, like museums and stuff. So, but again, I'll come on to that a little bit later.
That's really cool. And before we get onto your amazing COVID solution, what kind of challenges have you faced along the way, kind of pre-COVID? So in the kind of 2.5 journey leading up to now, have you faced any major challenges as a team or as a founder?
Yeah, I think being a founder is always a very long and hard journey. People will often reiterate this and you think, it's not going to be that hard. But I think it is in a lot of circumstances. I think sort of going back, what are some of the big moments that I look back on that make me go, oh, God, how did I live through that? I mean, funding's a big one, and funding's always a big one, especially because I am a sole founder. I don't have much experience in technology, or I didn't at least. It means that's always been a bit of a struggle. We're also, you know, being based out of the London or the Manchester tech ecosystems is also really, really tricky to secure funding. We have been quite lucky in that area. I say lucky, you know, a lot of hard work. So we've had about almost £2 million of funding to date. So I funded the business for the first 6 months. By that point, we had about 8 people with my own money. And there was one scenario where I was waiting for some funding to come in through debt finance, and it didn't come in, and we had employees' salaries to pay, and I ended up in a position, I was also in Singapore at the time with a potential client, and I ended up in a scenario where I was like, I need to pay them something. So I drew all of the money that I had left in my own personal bank account out and put it into the business bank account and split it across people. And then I didn't really realize what I was doing because I was doing it on the cuff, and I ended up in Singapore on my own with no money whatsoever because I just paid all my staff. And I was like, oh, fuck, like, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to eat? And I did the whole, and I'm sure that a lot of founders have probably done this at some point, ringing the parents and going, I'm really sorry, I fucked up. Like, I need a bit of money. So it was like I was 16 again, basically. So that was like a tough one. I mean, we've also had like, you know, our big wins and things as well. One of the first sort of things that really helped to catalyst our funding journey was we put an Innovate UK application in just on the cuff. We did it in like 2 days, and we're like, oh, we'll just see, we'll get our feedback. And then we got an email being like, oh yeah, we've awarded you £500,000 Innovate UK grant. And we're like, oh, like shit, this is great. Like we weren't expecting that. And then as a result of that, it meant that it catalyst the rest of our funding route. And I think that really helped us secure that journey that we've been on.
Definitely. And obviously talking about funding, you've mentioned a few, but like, how have you found funding? What different types of funding have you been through?
So we've done the whole sort of traditional route. We haven't been one of those lucky startups that goes out and does a seed round of £4 million 2 months after being founded because they've got an ex-founder from whatever large acquired tech company in their founding team. So, you know, family and friends, a lot of debt capital, which was from myself personally to begin with. And then we went through an angel investor round, got some really great people that brought heaps of experience within the industries that we're working with, and really helped us to reinforce that commercial offering that's now such a core part of our business. And then we went through a venture funding round that was about a year and a half in. And then we sort of just continued from there. We've recently just had another venture funding round as well. So as I said, we were in the midst of a funding round where we lost about half of it and we got taken off the table because it was right. A lot of our funding comes from EIS funds and VCTs. And as a result of that, we were working towards the end of March of the tax year. And then obviously everything happened sort of mid-March and we ended up in a position where quite a lot of it sort of came off the table. So we've had to be a bit strategic about where money's being spent. You know, we ended up stripping a lot of our marketing back and really focusing on product development rather than new sales until obviously everything else has sort of come up and happened. So yeah, it's definitely been a challenge, but I think that once, and this kind of comes on to a point which I'm sure you'll talk about later on, which is like what the advice that you'd give to founders is that it's always really tough until you get to that venture funding round. And then once you've got over that point, it's still very tough, but you have some people that really support in your vision. You have that validation behind you as a company, which helps to fuel those future funding rounds. And in the event that things don't go quite as planned, which they never do, like if you look at any person's business model and say what it's going to look like in 3 years, they'll never meet those targets, or it's very unlikely at least. They're with you when things get a bit tough, which is always good.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously talking about like your funding that you kind of lost, and then you guys have kind of pivoted, haven't you, in this whole COVID space, and you've been doing quite a lot. Tell us a bit about the new wearable with social distancing technology that you've released.
So yeah, this is an interesting one. So as I said, like with our funding coming off the table and all capital basically drying up within not just Europe but the world, I guess, we had to make this tough decision. You know, we went from having board meetings once every 2 months to once every 2 weeks and sort of saying what's going on and constantly evaluating the situation and looking into the government support packages that were on offer. And as I'm sure you've probably discussed with other entrepreneurs, they're really not great at the moment. Yeah. So really the only one that you can kind of take advantage of is the furloughing scheme. And that was really something that we didn't want to do as a company, but we were having to explore it as an option. And then we got a call from one of our largest prospective clients and they said, look, we've got this big problem at the moment, very traditional industry, and a lot of their staff might not necessarily follow the rules, should you say, with social distancing as well. And they said, we can't really be seen to be sending people back to work, but it's costing us in excess of £50 million every week in delayed projects and lost work time. And that even includes the government furloughing scheme. So if you then look at the cost it's costing the government, it's probably £70 million a week. And they said, like, what can you do? Is there any way that your wearable technology can help to sort of support this social distancing? I ran one of our lead engineers and I said, look, they've put this problem to us. It's a massive opportunity. Can we solve it? And he said, well, how quickly does it need to happen? I was like, in about 2 weeks. He went, that's fucking impossible. Like, you can't possibly commit us to that. Like, the complexities in the technology that we have to create to not just detect the proximity between two people, but to do that accurately, because it's very similar to the saying that you keep hearing from the government about the testing issues, which is that it's better to have no test at all than it is to have a bad test. And it's very similar with this. He said, like, we can't do that. So I kind of went, oh, okay, fine. And then went away and, as entrepreneurs do, sat on my laptop in my bed until probably 2, 3 a.m. looking through, sifting the internet for possible options and solutions that could help towards this solution that we could very easily sort of fit into our product. And then we previously researched some technology called ultra wideband, which in the simplest of ways, it uses something called time of flight to measure the signals, to measure the distance between two devices opposed to signal strength, which is what you'd see in like Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. So it's very similar to like a sonar system in a submarine. So it'll send out a signal and then it'll wait for that to come back and measure the time between the two in milliseconds. And as a result, you can get this sub 10 centimeter accuracy between the distance between two devices. So we had researched this previously for our collision avoidance system between vehicles and moving individuals. And we said, well, you know, maybe we can revisit this. So I rang our lead engineer and I said, look, we're going to do this. I think we should spend some money on it. And, you know, bearing in mind that we've just had a funding round fall through. We're already like cash reserves as it is. And I'm going, yeah, we're going to spend like way more and like decrease our runway by half so we can bring this out. And everyone's going, oh, Leo, are you sure you want to do this? And I'm going, yeah, it's fine, it's fine. And it all looked a bit touch and go. And we entered into the government funding round for Innovate UK for the COVID solution, which they still haven't announced yet. It's like 2 weeks overdue now. And we're like, oh, well, maybe we'll get 50 grand and it should be all right. So we've committed to all of this. And then we hear that there's like 8,500 applicants and they can only award 400. We're like, oh, fuck, like we totally screwed ourselves here. We spent loads of money. And we then got a bit further into it. We had a few more clients expressing an interest. And we said, well, we've got to start doing a press release and put it out. So this Wednesday last week, so not even 7 days ago, we put a press release out and said, like, this is what we're doing. We did all the marketing around it. And, you know, bearing in mind, we've already developed this solution now and we're wanting to get it deployed. And it's safe to say that, like, it has been something that we've never seen before. Our head of business development, who's been with us for a year, he was like, I've seen more leads in one day than I've seen throughout the whole year of me working here. At one point, because our lead system is linked into our Slack channel, they were coming through like every 10 minutes and they're like big companies as well. So it's like BAE Systems, Network Rail, Rolls Royce, and all these huge companies saying like, we're desperate for this solution, to the point where one of the companies we had was big engineering company in Singapore for 300,000 devices, which is about £20 million in annual recurring revenue, which, you know, we were planning to have like 700 grand revenue this year, and now we're looking at this huge potential opportunity. So yeah, it's been interesting, but it's got to the point now where just before I jumped on this call, I've got off a board meeting where we've had to agree to sign off on hiring about 8 new people just so we can keep up with this scaling demand that we're now seeing. So it's definitely interesting. You know, we've managed to pivot, I guess you could say. It's definitely something that we're concerned around a little bit though, because it almost looks as it, on the face of it, it makes it look like we're trying to profiteer off like a really tough shit situation that the world's going through. But then if you always sort of look back to that mission statement that I talked about us helping to improve safety within the workplace, it really aligns so closely with that it would have been a no-brainer for us to not offer that.
And it sounds like your solution can help so many companies kind of get back to work and start moving things along again. So it's, you're one of the pieces of the puzzle on the way out of Corona, kind of like getting the economy back moving, you know, on that upside. So I don't think you can look at it like you're profiting, you're just doing something good to help. Like, that's your business at the end of the day.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, it's helping to create new jobs. And like you said, it's helping to bring that economy back on track. And it's not just this is the interesting thing that I sort of touched upon earlier. It's not just the industries that we previously worked in, like your construction and your infrastructure. The leads that we've had coming in, the inquiries are totally mad, to be honest. So we had one company that they provide a load of infrastructure for all the museums across the UK. And they're like, we want to bring people back into museums. And can we like provide your solutions to people as they enter the museum? And then it helps them to sort of be more aware of their surroundings. And then supermarkets for helping social distancing when people are in supermarkets and stopping people just coming right up next to you, which I experience every time I go to the supermarket. I think the weirdest one is, I mean, it's not weird, it's interesting, but private schools. So there's 600,000 students in private education in the UK, and, you know, their parents are all paying these very significant fees for them to go to these schools, and they can't return back to school. So these schools are basically being pressured to refund these fees, but their parents still want their kids to go to school because they want them to get this great education. So they're saying, well, can we sort of support social distancing through your technology and like gamify the idea of social distancing? So like kids are like competing with their friends to see who can stay the furthest away from people, and like these whole crazy sort of ideas that are coming about. And it's really interesting, but we've now got into this route of saying, well, how do we clarify which leads we want to go after? Because we can't chase them all. So we're having to, you know, block out leads from different countries, and really disappointingly, you know, SMEs that was once one of our large target markets, we're now having to say, we're really sorry, but we just can't facilitate SMEs because we don't have the bandwidth.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess this is just a little kind of more of a personal question. It seems that you kind of took the risk with this, obviously, as the founder, is your decision, and obviously you went with it. Would you say that you're a risk taker, and would you say that normally they pay off, because this could be the biggest risk that's ever paid off for you to date?
I think to be an entrepreneur, you've got to be a risk taker, definitely. I think I'm definitely a fan of taking risks, to be honest. Keeps me on my edge. The way that I, because this isn't a question that, you know, is just coming from you. It's a board level question where they've been saying to us, like, are you sure that you want to do this? That it's hundreds of thousands of pounds we're having to commit to make this happen so quickly. And, you know, that's eating into our runway if none of these contracts come off. And the way that I described it to them was, when you first invested in this business, it was a risk, and it was always going to be a risk. Whilst this is a risk, it's an educated risk, because we've got so many inquiries coming in. And if we weren't to sort of take it with both hands and run full pelt and see what we can achieve, we'd be a bit naive. Now, hopefully I won't be saying that in 6 months after our runways come to the end and no contracts will come off. And hopefully I'll be able to prove my investors and my board right. But we'll see. One of the fun traits of having a board and investors.
Definitely. Just going back to the new product, I read it also has a useful feature in the fact that it has the ability to trace contact back. Can you tell us a little bit more about this feature?
So obviously, that, you know, there's been so much in the news about the NHS apps and the privacy implications with that, and also the issues that come and are associated with Bluetooth and proximity tracking. So what we're kind of offering as a solution is, we can work out how long people have been in contact with other individuals. And this is really key, because if you look at the NHS app, especially if it's Bluetooth based, I could walk past someone's house on my street and it would say that I've been in contact with them, even though they were in their house. And even if I was just in contact for a second, and then effectively I'm at risk of COVID-19 and I am going to have to self-isolate for 7 days. Now, that brings so many complexities around the whole issue of the economy and the implications that it's going to have, because effectively everyone's just going to be in lockdown again. So I should say, it's a great solution in the purpose of mass rollout, because you can't provide every single person in the UK with an ultra wideband device. Just be too expensive and not practical. But when you're looking from a workplace scenario, the last thing that you want is one person in your workplace to be confirmed as COVID-19 positive. And then, because of the nature of how the Bluetooth proximity tracking works, it would effectively have this mass effect across your whole workforce. And just one or two cases within a workplace could mean that your whole company has to go into lockdown. So with our technology, what we're doing is we're monitoring the time that people have been exposed. So if someone's just walking past for like a second, and we're working with one of the big clothing manufacturers in their warehouses, and they said, like, we're not designed for social distancing. The tracks in between the two shelvings are less than 2 meters. So people are going to have to walk past each other, but one person will be facing one way and the other will be the other. So it's quite safe. So we can track that sort of time. So it'll be like seconds rather than minutes, but also to a really high accuracy as well. So it means that it's almost like, in the simplest way, the NHS sort of contact tracing app, but on steroids and in a much more effective manner. And it just helps to mitigate a lot of that risk for your workplace, but it also helps with the compliance level as well, because it means that if an employer or if an employee says that, you know, they've come down with COVID-19, you can see who they've been in contact with for what time. And then you can also see, like, so that's tier one, and then you can see tier two, which is the people that they've also been in contact with. So you can really help to understand which areas of your workforce are most at risk.
Sounds amazing. And obviously, I know you said you're keen to get it deployed, and you've done so much amazing work in such a short space of time. Do you have a time frame of when it might be deployed to your customers?
So next week, our first product, hardware is hard. That's a, you know, the common expression, and it is. It was, our first product was horrible. We got delayed by 9 months, I think, and it cost way more than expected, but we got there in the end. But we learned so much during that process, and we've channeled all of those learnings into this second product, which has allowed us to bring what was an 18-month product cycle into about 8 weeks. But a critical thing about that was, as well, is we've actually moved all of our manufacturing to the UK, because whilst China is cheap, the lead times for that are a lot more complex. And there was also this huge risk, which was, if we were to place an order of 100 or 200,000 devices, which is like millions of pounds worth of stock. And then China goes into lockdown, which I saw a notification just this morning saying they're testing 11 million people in Wuhan. Then all of our stock is stuck in China. We've committed to it. Yeah. And then all of our contracts in the UK fall through because we can't deliver. And then all of a sudden we're left with like a £5 million liability. So that's not only helped us to mitigate some of that risk, but it's also helped us with being able to speed that process up. We've got a really great partner and now we can turn devices around in 3 weeks as opposed to 8 weeks, which is critical in such a time sensitive sort of environment.
Definitely. And how have kind of you guys and your team had to adapt to the current situation? I know you've adapted your products and you've kind of pivoted from your funding disaster thing around and now you're in like one of the best positions ever, but have you guys had to be remote working? Have you made like major changes?
So we started remote working way before it was sort of asked or sort of made compulsory. We have about 30 or 40% of our staff that work remotely anyway, because being based in Lincoln, there's a very small talent pool, which meant that we naturally had to go outside of the county to get the kind of talent that we were looking for. And as a result, it wasn't too much of a challenge for us. There was definitely learning curves. I think I would even go as far as saying that it's been a really enjoyable experience. And I think that maybe we've even come a bit closer as a team, because one of the complexities of our sort of growth rate within such a small city was that we were spaced across two different offices, which meant that the communication between those two offices just wasn't there at some time. So, but now obviously everyone's on Zoom, we're having different no pub pub quizzes on Friday. I'm actually hosting virtual murder mystery. Yeah. So like we've got all these really fun things going on and it means that everyone's communicating even better, I would say. One of the big sort of misconceptions, I think, and it was something that maybe even I felt a little bit, was if you've just got all of your team just straight out of the office, like productivity is going to be hit massively. It was something that was also questioned to me by friends and family saying, like, surely you're going to have issues. How are you going to make sure people are working? But, you know, we've got an amazing team. And if anything, I think that productivity has seen a huge increase. And I think that comes with its risks, though, with burnout and such forth. But yeah, it's gone really well. And I think the next challenge really is onboarding new staff members. Because as I said earlier, we're just about to bring on a lot of new people. We brought someone on last week, so our first sort of virtual onboarding experience, which was interesting, fun, and just as effective, I think.
Oh, good. And so that kind of leads me on to our next question perfectly. What do you guys have planned for the future? I guess you've answered it short term, but also short term and long term. And did you have plans set for the future? And then obviously Corona came and kind of twisted them all around and changed your direction sort of thing.
It's hard to say that this is definitely going to be what's happened. But, you know, I should imagine even through the course of this podcast, we probably had one or two quite large sort of inquiries come in. And this is the way that I put it to our team when I was trying to convince them to grow their teams by almost double, was that we have the potential to speed up our roadmap for the next 3 years and do that in 6 months if we sort of take this opportunity with both hands. So really, as a company, what we're aiming to do is, and our vision for the future is to have really cool technology that employees feel, you know, really engaged with, and they're really on board with using, and it is helping to prevent accidents and fatalities within the workplace. It's very hard to track because it's very speculative with accidents, because you don't know that an accident was going to happen if it doesn't happen. But we'd really like to be in a position where we can track this data and be able to sort of evidence and say, well, we know that we've saved, you know, X amount of fatalities or prevented X amount of fatalities within this industry over the past year. And you can't put a value on a life, really. You know, you can throw however much VC funding or however large your team is or all your big ARR numbers. But like realistically, when you really boil it down, if you can say that you've saved someone's life, that's worth way more than any kind of sort of numbers, really, in my opinion, at least. My VCs might say different.
It's really shown through in this interview that like you have like a passion, and it's like that's the purpose of you doing this, not just to, you know, run a business and make loads of money, that there was a reason behind it. And yeah, it's really nice to see, and it's really shown through. And my final question for you today, which you kind of have touched on, so if you don't want to answer it, it's fine, but do you have any advice for any other startups out there?
Persistence is a word that we use a lot in our company. It's fucking tough, like, don't get me wrong, but if you're persistent and you work hard and you've got that one clear vision, and that clear vision can't be to make money, and that is a big, big misconception. You know, you get a lot of entrepreneurs that are in it and you're never going to achieve very well or much, at least in terms of happiness from something like that. But persistence, doing something that you really sort of believe in. But in terms of the current times that we're going through at the moment, whilst it's going to be a recession and it's going to be a really tough one, so many exciting and big tech stories have come from recessions, and it's a really exciting opportunity to grasp and try and commercialize and utilize on. So see if you can find those holes, like we've done it and it's worked really well for us. So if you can pivot or adapt your business to what is potentially going to be the next 12 or 18 months, I would advise doing that.
Theo, it's been amazing talking to you today. Thank you so much for being on the episode, and good luck with everything. I'm excited to follow the journey of Tended and see what happens for you guys short and long term.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
Serial Entrepreneur.